Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by Los Bagels, bringing the community organic fresh baked bagels, specialty breads and baked goods, and my personal favorite, their famous slug. Los Bagels, they're here, baking through it, 7 days a week at 1061 I Street in Arcata or 403 2nd Street in Old Town Eureka, or visit losbagels.com. It's Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost podcast adventure, and the last one of 2020. My name's Stephanie McGarry.
And my name's Andrew Goff. Yeah, we've done this since April now. I think we've done over 30 of them, just zooming with local people, and the results are in. We definitely did this.
Yes. No. There's no arguing that.
Yeah. Just a few bits of housekeeping. As Steph said, we're going to take a couple weeks off, but that's a great time to catch up on all of our previous episodes and previous guests, a list of which you can look at below this player that you're listening to if you're listening to this on the website, or you can find them all on iTunes, where you can also subscribe to this. That was a lot to digest, but do that. Also, if you're a person that has a business or just a message that you want to get out to the Humboldt listening audience, you can buy advertising on this podcast, I'm told, by emailing. What is it?
Advertise at lostcoastoutpost.com.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, no, I can't believe that you could forget that, Andrew, but that's okay. Yeah. Let's just get to talking about what we're gonna talk about today. We all are missing live music and live events. Of course, it was the first thing to go away for us here in Humboldt during all of this. And now it's been months and months where we still haven't been able to enjoy live music. We have New Year's Eve coming up and the holidays and times that we would normally be able to go see a show. Of course, on New Year's Eve, so many of us would normally be going to see the Absinthe Quartet, who almost always play a show on New Year's Eve. Yeah. This year, that's not going to be a possibility, but we are lucky enough to be joined by Mike Schwartz, better known as Tofu, the
Tofu
drummer.
Mike.
Tofu Mike, maybe just Tofu. He's going to explain a little bit about that name to us, I think. Yeah. We're going to make him, but also talk a bit about what he's been up to and what he thinks needs to happen for us to be able to enjoy live music here again.
Hello!
Hey, it's working.
It's the future.
Today we are joined by Mike Schwartz, drummer, known by many around Humboldt as Tofu. And real quick, just so it's on the record somewhere, because I don't know that it is. Why are you Tofu?
Because I'm a tasteless white square.
Oh, wait, is that really? No, there's an actual. There's another reason, right?
I used to work at the Tofu shop. I got a job there back in 94. 93, 94, I started working there. No, 95. It was kind of funny, the Times Standard actually did a little like piece about local businesses and stuff like that. And that was when it was in the culinary building, whatever that is now. Yeah. And they took a picture of me making tofu at one point, and they put it in the paper, and it was captioned Tofu Maker Mike Schwartz. And my friend started calling me Tofu Maker Mike Schwartz. And then that just became Tofu Maker Mike or Tofu Mike. You know, and you know, there's so many mics in the world. So which mic are you thinking of? Yeah. Tofu mic. So then I quit after a year and joined the forced activist movement here in Humboldt to protect headwaters. Yeah. And, you know, I wanted, you know, the really fat forest name like Bear or Eagle or something awesome like that. But they were all kind of taken. So, you know, Tofu is short for the wild Tofuti beast.
Okay. And just so people are reminded of your drumming prowess, I will mention that by one definitive poll taken very long ago, you are Humboldt County's second best drummer.
Second most popular drummer.
Second most popular drummer. Yeah. According to the Lost Coast Outpost.
Oh, okay. It was a lot. I was like, what was this poll?
This predates you, Steph.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who was the favorite?
The most popular drummer in that poll was Steve Bonner, Steph.
He hits
them hard, and we'll wrap up your introduction here real quick. But like you've played in most Humboldt bands. Can you name pop quiz? Can you name all the bands that you've played in Humboldt?
Right. Well, the last year or two, I've been playing with Rosewater, a Grateful Dead tribute. Obviously, the main band is the Absinthe. We're now the Quartet, the Absinthe Quartet. Yeah. We were a quintet for a bunch of years, but downsized. leaner and meaner. And then I had a little band called The Hip Joint for a while, which was really fun. We had a good 2-year run. And then I played with Play Dead, another Grateful Dead band, which is super fun. And then other than that, I've mostly just sat in on different projects over the years, you know, different cover bands usually, because, you know, there's only so many Friday and Saturday nights and, you know, different drummers will get different gigs and you got to like choose the one. And so I'm like, I'm a good, again, second fill drummer to fill in some of these seats. But it's always fun just like just go in and play some rock and roll, because like those other bands, the Hip Joint, Absinthe, and the Grateful Dead bands, I mean, they're really fun, but it's a little different than just straight up rock and roll. And just sometimes just sitting in with a rock and roll cover band is just a total blast as a drummer.
Absinthe plays time signatures that are beyond most people.
It's a lot of everything that is either beyond and or irks most people, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so Mike, drummer extraordinaire. So we wanted to have you on today to brainstorm a little bit. It feels like there is more reason to be hopeful right now than there has been in a long time. The election is over. Vaccines are going into arms. There's a new KFC coming into Eureka. It's just a really exciting time to be alive.
I want the jerk chicken place open. Can we move the jerk chicken place to where KFC
I think it opened. Isn't
it? Yeah, but I want them like to have better. I want them to have like good location.
You want the good location? Okay.
Stuck up in uptown Eureka.
We'll get to that. There are other priorities, but we're trying to salvage this county. And one of the big pieces of the Humboldt experience that we've been missing through this whole pandemic kerfuffle has been events and shows and music. A couple of months ago, we had Laurel from Humbrews on the show, and she painted kind of a grim picture as far as you know, the future of touring bands goes. There's lots of moving parts that are broken in that industry, according to her. So we turn to you, Tofu, and your fellowship of local musicians. When our case numbers start to go down, we're ready to emerge from our COVID cocoons. How can we help to make sure that there's music and vibrancy in this community again?
That's a big question. Well, my feeling is that, you know, people are going to be primed for it, but there's also going to be a little bit of worry. You know, there'll be some nervousness amongst certain populations about whether it's safe to go out again. One thing great about Humboldt is the generally mild climate for, you know, a good half the year.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that sort of coincides with the reduction in numbers. So hopefully by May, or maybe even, you know, say like, you know, that first week of June when Benbow happens, you know, I'm just thinking outdoor events, you know, are going to be key to bringing everything back. You know, what other sort of live outdoor things do we have? We've obviously got the farmer's market.
Oyster Fest
will probably be a big one, but I don't know. I mean, my opinion on all this stuff is like the pinch point on all these events with all these different people is, you know, the bathroom situation. And like, you can have a bunch of people outside, but you know, if everyone's just sort of sharing the same bathrooms, like that's where the safety issue, I mean, some people are just skeeved out on that in general. But, you know, it's going to happen.
I don't think that's anybody's favorite part of outdoor music events.
Not at all.
Usually. So.
Right. And so it's that's, you know, that's sort of like, the choke point, pardon all these puns, but it's the thing that's going to make it potentially dangerous over time. And plus, you know, we're way up here in Humboldt. I'm not sure when the vaccine is going to get here to the full amount, to, you know, 50% or 60%. I mean, I know we've got some, and maybe like shots are starting next week. I don't know. That's the rumor I heard.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a while, and definitely, and probably till almost, you know, the middle or end of summer before people start going to indoor gigs in any sort of regular fashion.
Yeah.
And, you know, from a musician standpoint, you know, I know a lot of musicians around here, a lot of working people who will, you know, work playing gigs every weekend. And a lot of those gigs are at the casinos.
Yeah.
And, you know, the casinos, you've got the cigarette reality, and that just seems like this way for your personal aerosols to travel and be shared with everyone. And it's always been a little gross, a little gnarly, if you don't like cigarette smoke, to be in those places and to have that. I mean, I don't know. There's so many different issues with that. With, you know, I heard those places are open, but they're not allowing smoking. And then is that going to make people not come to those places? Like, you know, cigarette addicts? I don't know.
It seems like there's less and less of the the people that need cigarettes to go to places, but
you'd be surprised, you know. I mean, I've been in there on a Friday, Saturday night doing sound sometimes, and it's just like, wow, there's like a lot of people in here.
I guess when, you know, so I mean, when it becomes more safe and more of these options open up, like, are you ready for that? Are you itching to return to playing with Absinthe and other projects?
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody is.
Yeah.
I sort of put a post up the other day talking about how I miss the sound of applause.
Yeah.
You know, from the sound guy's perspective, and then also from a performer, you know, when you're a performer, sometimes, you know, two times a month or maybe more, you've got people cheering your name and screaming out in applause, you know, spontaneously, like every 10 minutes. And it could get, you know, a little addictive. And to not have that for all this time has been a little like, ugh. And just to not even hear it, you know, like I was saying, the thing about applause is it's just this, you know, it's this spontaneous moment of joy and gratitude that an audience shares together. And people are hungry for that, especially up here. People are just, in general, I think, joyful and full of gratitude. And, you know, and they love all the musicians that come through so much.
Yeah.
And to be able to share that again will be great.
We talked about this with other people, but I haven't heard anyone say it that way, of just the sound of applause, like missing the sound of applause. And when, now that you say that, it's like, oh, I realize that I feel that too, you know, that is something missing, is that it just actually, like, the sound of it in general. I guess you could just, like, play the sound of applause for yourself sometimes, but it wouldn't be the same.
No, it's definitely not the same.
That would be a little weird if you were doing that at home, I have to say.
I remember we did a little, like, live from Keep little session a couple of years ago, and of course Absinthe, our songs are too long, and so they had to like cut it down, but like they did this little show, but then they sort of tried to like add canned applause to it, and it sounded weird, you know, like there's nothing quite like actual applause generally.
That's why
it was so great when we did all those shows from the old steeple in this last year that got broadcast on Keith. They weren't broadcast live, they were mixed down and stuff, but the audience reaction in that room is always so great. And like I've said earlier, I think the old steeple is probably one of my favorite venues in Humboldt for just the sound and the vibe in there.
Yeah.
Well, like you guys were, you know, you're both saying there's really been, you know, no traditional live music since March, you were saying.
March 13th, the last party in the world, yeah.
What was it? What was the last thing that happened in Humboldt? What was the last, like, show that happened?
Well, it was Friday the 13th, and I played with Rosewater, the Grateful Dead tribute, at the Eagle House in Eureka.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it was crazy because, you know, I think the weekend before, San Francisco and L.A. shut down everything. And up here, we were like, oh, man, this is getting a little crazy.
Yeah. We knew it was coming.
Yeah.
We knew it was coming. And then I remember a lot of gigs that night got canceled kind of last minute. And we was like, you know, people were like, are we going to do this? Are we not going to do this? And there was a band that was going to play at Fatsy's while we were setting up, and they canceled. You know, I remember hearing about bands over at Mad River Tap Room, and they canceled.
Man.
That's probably going to be a good place for bands to come back, actually, is like, someplace like the Mad River Tap Room.
Yeah.
Just because it's outside.
Yeah.
Once the rain stops. Oy.
Yeah. And with a restaurant, you can start as it just being less of like a concert gathering too.
Right. Totally. So yeah, March 13th. So we played that Friday the 13th, and you know, we had been working on this show for 2 months or something. We're like, there's no way that we're not going to play the show. Like we needed to make it happen. And I think everyone felt like they, almost everyone. I definitely got a little bit of sincere pushback from friends, people worried that, yeah, you know, could be a spread. I'm very thankful that it doesn't seem like anything got, you know, related to that event. I remember one of our lead singers sort of joked, changed the line in one of the songs from people shaking hands to people washing their hands, which was a pretty light moment. But that sort of brings me to one of my other major thoughts about all this, which is the idea of, you know, some promoter or some band, you know, decided to put on a show. And then what if a bunch of cases get traced back to the show? And I just can't imagine that.
Yeah, you don't want to be that venue or that band that soldiers on despite the best warnings and ends up causing a bigger problem for.
Exactly.
It's not going to be good for anyone.
Obviously, like, you know, more people are surviving now, but people are still dying. Like, obviously, every day, 3,000 people the past 2 weeks a day. So you don't want to add to that at all, especially doing something that you love. That's just like a heavy thing. And I mean, that'll probably come into play in people's decisions to get back out there to do gigs. You know, like everyone's going to want to feel really safe about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you start to get into the issue of how much, you know, money can be made, because, you know, all these shows, they take work to put on, tons of different work from tons of different avenues of sides. I'm sure Laurel went into that. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, the margins on all this stuff are super thin. And I mean, people are going to be ready to pay, I think, and to come out and party, but like, there's still going to be a little skepticism. Is it safe to go out? And I think that could keep just enough people back to, you know, make these things not necessarily profitable to do. As you know, which is, you know, and or, you know, at least solvent, you know, some, I mean, there's profitable and then there's potentially losing money too. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's a grand Humboldt tradition to lose money on the gigs you're promoting. I mean,
yeah, sure. It's gotta be expected.
People been losing money on gigs for 20 years.
Yeah.
The man, you talking about that just made, like, I just had this, you know, just vision of the, you know, that first show that I go to was like, let's just say it's an Absinthe show at the Jam or Humbrews. Right. Yeah. I go in there and this is like, that room is going to feel heavy. Like everyone there is going to just be like, man, we didn't have this for over a year.
For so long. Like, I know.
We didn't get
it.
Like, you know,
plays a first note. People are going to be like, yeah, I love that.
Yeah. A lot of tears, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
You, talking about that show on the 13th, Friday the 13th, March 13th, you know, was there still, did a lot of people still show up, or did you find that like half the people just ended up not coming? Or?
No, it was definitely packed in there.
And it was a good show. I hope it was just a good show. That's what I'm thinking. If you had known, like, it was going to, if anybody had known this was going to be the last time.
We kind of knew. I mean, I was calling it the last party in the world that night. Yeah. For sure. It felt like it, you know. And, you know, in the beginning of March, too, I mean,
I didn't think it was going to last this long.
I thought it was going to be pretty bad, though. I mean, okay. You know, we were lucky that it, you know, I feel like the West Coast got lucky because San Francisco and LA shut down when they did.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about how New York stayed open for another 2 weeks or something past LA and San Francisco, that's one of the reasons why the whole East Coast got it way worse than we did. Obviously, LA has gotten it pretty bad too. But, you know, you hear reports of people going down there and just, you know, seeing people, even in Whole Foods, walking around without masks and all the dumb stuff. And it's like, and look, and now the headline today, LA has no ICU capacity.
Yeah.
You know, was it worth it to like go hear a cover band at a private house party? I don't know.
Well, you were saying that since the traditional live music has stopped, that you have tried to do, you know, a couple of things. Have you? I mean, you still keep in touch with your bandmates, I imagine. Have you been talking about, like, do you spend this time planning for the future or working on some other kind of project? Like, I mean, what have you been doing and
right. Well, you know, everyone laid low for that first month, right? And then maybe after about 2 months, and everyone's sort of peeking out of their hovels a little bit. And it's like, okay, I think Humboldt didn't get it too bad. Like, you know, we can meet up. And so we got together, we had a practice, and we just sort of goofed off, just, you know, shook the dust off everything. The sad part for Absinthe in particular is that at the end of 2020, we had sort of dialed back. You know, we were practicing every once in a while, but a couple of us had other little projects going on. And then we had a great spring lined up, you know, a bunch of shows stretching into June and July, you know, monthly or weekly. And I'm sure that was true for most of the bands around here. And I know, like, I think that happened for the guys in Digging Dirt too, you know, like Humboldt's second most popular export at this point. And I mean, those guys, you know, spent last year doing the groundwork, digging dirt to, you know, go out and tour and go big. And they were about to pop this spring too. And then all of a sudden, the whole thing got shut down.
Yeah.
So that's tough. And so anyway, what Absinthe did was, you know, we shut down for a while and then we got together for one practice. And I mean, all of us had been laying pretty low. So we were in the same room. We're like, we're in the pod now. But after that, on a whole, we just kind of decided that maybe this wasn't the safest thing to do long-term going into the future. And so we're sort of on hiatus. In the meantime, we have an album that we had done most of the recording for like a year or two ago. And so we've been sort of slowly refining that, recording some overdubs and little things like that. Mm. And that album's due out in early next year is what we're hoping.
And you say your whole spring 2020 summer touring schedule is wiped out. Like how many shows is that?
Well, you know, we were mostly doing local stuff, but yeah. It was probably, I mean, it was six on the calendar.
But you do play festivals occasionally and leave the Redwood Curtain sometimes.
We used to do that more. It's been a little tougher because some of our guys have young kids. So,
okay.
But you know, it was like, I mean, everything from a homebrew show to, you know, playing that outside, like the, I guess it used to be the first Friday up in Trinidad, but maybe they changed it to the last Saturday or something.
I mean, does that hurt financially? Like even it's just, you know, you say they're just local shows, but these, you count on these, right?
Yeah. I mean, especially me, you know, like I'm a performer and a sound engineer, like my whole livelihood got shut down.
Yeah.
So that was pretty tough. You know, in the beginning, yeah, like you said, you don't know how long this is going to last. And so for a month, I was like eating off credit cards and trying to make it work. And then I got a short-term job with one of the PPP loans in a local business. But then that ended pretty quick because the loan ran out. And so then June, it was starting to get pretty tight. But then I finally got California to give me some unemployment. And then, you know, that was nice living when Mitch McConnell was giving us 600 extra bucks a month.
Yeah.
July was all right.
Thanks, Mitch.
But I know, but that's, you know, that's just me. I lucked out. I know plenty of musicians who still haven't gotten that worked out because the system is not, you know, super intact.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, talking to other local musicians, especially the ones that, you know, that do kind of have a larger financial stake in it. Like, what do you get a sense of that their spirit is at this moment? Like how are they holding up? Sorry.
Well, you know, I mean, the joke about being a musician is, you know, you don't get paid to play the music. You get paid to lug the gear around, you know, to set it up and break it down at the end of the night. And honestly, I haven't been like too close in touch with a bunch of other musicians around here. I know it's, I mean, like I was saying earlier, the emotional toll of just not being able to share your art with people, you know, especially in the way that you've been doing for 10, 15, 20 years. It's hard, you know, especially when everything else is just a little funky and, you know, people are dying and then holidays alone and stuff like that. It's it could just be a little trying on your heart. But it's gotta be, you know, very tough financially, which always adds to the problem. You know, I mean, as musicians, we're always, you know, scraping by, you know, right. when you, you know, even like bands that make like halfway decent money, it's still like, there's only one Friday night and one Saturday night, you know, unless you're out touring 5 nights a week. And even then you've got a lot of expenses to cover. So, yeah. Yeah, so it's tough.
What about, you know, local venues? We talked a little bit about this, but I imagine that, you know, obviously they're going to be itching to go whenever our numbers drop. I imagine that negotiations between musicians and venues will look a little bit different as everybody gets kind of back on their creative feet. You said, as you say, you run sound for lots of local spots. What do you think venues should be doing in this off time?
Putting up sound treatment in their venues so they sound better.
and calling you to help them out with that.
Yeah, I know. It's been a shame that like no one with money asked me what to do with it. But yeah, there's definitely a few places that. But I mean, but the trouble with that is that all this stuff is expensive, and there's not a lot of money going around unless you're a big corporation. But I mean, you know, if it was up to me, I would see, you know, California somehow have some major arts funding that went into making venues sound better, either with, you know, mostly with acoustic treatment. I mean, and this is, you know, a little out there, but this is the things that sound people think of, you know, some sort of acoustic treatment and doing the work now while the place is shut down for a couple of weeks. And obviously I think probably half that would be putting in really solid ventilation systems. Because you know there's probably going to be another one of these in a few years, and so having some sort of high grade ventilation system is going to be crucial. And you know but then you know you start to get in the thing, of course, you know, it's crucial for venues, but it's more crucial for schools, and it's been crucial for schools for, you know, 20 to 50 years, and it still hasn't been done. I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but I don't know if you noticed, but we've got like really killer planes and bombs in this country. and I'm so glad we're spending our money on that.
Had to put our money somewhere, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, why would we protect ourselves against something that killed 300,000 of us when we can bomb people around the world, you know, build audio acoustic treatment, not bombs.
But I digress.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, so do you get, I mean, do you hear, can you provide any sort of state of the union? Do you know, as working at Soundman, like you talk to people that own venues, do you know who's holding on and who's struggling? Like,
I don't, I mean, I know that, I haven't really talked to a bunch of owners. You know, anything I would think of would just be kind of speculation. But you know, like the Arcata Theater Lounge, which probably had, you know, the best in Arcata possibility to, you know, get a certain number of people in there, while giving enough room for social distancing. I mean, I heard they had a big party in there and they weren't doing social distancing. I don't want to call anybody out, but. And then they shut down. Most of the venues around here are a lot smaller than that. And, you know, while I've definitely done a bunch of shows at the Jambalaya with 10 people in the audience.
just go back to that.
Yeah.
This is what we call not sustainable. Yeah. Which isn't to say that we didn't do it for years, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. And, you know, I sort of like, started a thread about this when this whole thing started, maybe back in April or May. And it was a little bit of a rallying cry to the musicians around Humboldt. I was saying, like, look, once this thing turns around, we can't be taking any more $35 gigs anywhere, you know, no more $100 for a full band to play for 3 or 4 hours. And it doesn't happen everywhere, but it happens at a few places. And then I got some sincere pushback from venue owners that I know, and it's that same thing where there's not quite enough money to go around. You can't get blood from a stone.
I think that's
a challenge.
I was going to kind of ask you about that, because I think for a lot of years, there has been this kind of, as you say, rallying cry from local musicians like, hey, we need to get together and force these venues to pay us more. But now we have a situation where, you know, these venues have been closed for months, a year by the time we get, so, you know, it's like, okay, we got to go back to square one, and like, we're all going to struggle together for a while, I guess, in order to get people back in the swing of doing this.
Right. But of course, that's the tough part too, because, you know, when does that stop? You know, when does everyone say, oh, okay, now we can start paying the musicians, you know, what they're worth.
Yeah.
You know, even like 5 years ago, there was this funny meme about Back to the Future. We're like, Marty, I just came back from the year 2050 and musicians are still making $100 a night. You know, and a lot of people would be, you know, stoked to get $100 a night, you know, even a year ago. But I, you know, I talked to a couple of the older musicians around here, people who were hitting it in the 80s. And, you know, they used to get $100 a night playing four nights a week, you know, Blue Lake, Arcata, Eureka, and then maybe back in Eureka. But that was, you know, sort of the 80s, and it was when logging money was flowing around here and the drunk driving laws hadn't enacted yet. I remember them saying that, like, once the drunk driving laws came in a lot hard, you know, people stopped going out to shows and stopped making as much money.
Damn.
You know, and then like then gas prices go up, and then VCRs and Netflix start to happen, and all of a sudden people are just a lot happier to stay at home instead of going out to shows.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I mean, you know, going that way up to the present moment, you get someone like Trey Anastasio, who started doing these live concerts, probably, you know, live streams, probably as good as it can be, with really quality sound, really quality video. And then I guess he was using Twitch, which I still don't grok, and was getting instantaneous feedback from the crowd.
Yeah.
And that's as good as it gets, but like, that's a huge production. It's a lot of money, a lot of time to make something like that happen. And that's one of the, you know, it's another thing too, why you need like really solid broadband in this area, you know, cause like, people have, you know, people can stream movies up here, but people can't upload high speeds without paying a ton of money.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like that's a whole like streaming side trip.
Yeah. You know, no, like, I feel bad about, like, you know, cause obviously there's a few events that I participate in annually, and we talk about like, well, are we going to do it this year? No, obviously. Well, do we try and do a streaming version of it? And I've just been like, I don't think so. Like, I don't want to force people, or even, not that I could force them, I don't even want to suggest people that they spend more time in front of screens.
Right. A lot of people are starting to get over that for sure.
Yeah. I don't want to aid in bringing on this screen-based future any more than I have to.
Totally. I think it's more about just, it's almost for the people who are doing it more than the audience at that point. It's like giving them something just to do with the energy that normally goes towards this thing. And then also just maybe giving like a glimmer of hope, you know, just saying, checking in with people, saying, we're still here. We still care about this. We're still trying to keep a little bit of momentum going so that this will be able to continue in the future. You know, but I also, something that you, when you were talking about how the live music scene had already been, you know, impacted kind of negatively prior to the pandemic, you know, that, and you've heard this a lot. And when we were talking to Laurel, she was talking about this too, there being, especially for smaller venues, already a struggle in this industry, and you seeing there less of a draw for people to go to live shows. Depending on how long it takes us to get back there, you know, we could see people's love rekindled for it, right, after all of this. And I think that that's something that could be a silver lining eventually, is like, people realize now how much they miss it, you know.
Right, totally.
Because they don't have the option.
I mean, like, I think we're like on the verge of a new jazz age, basically.
Yeah, right? Like, what followed...
Yeah, 1920s. You know,
exactly, the last, yeah, exactly.
Does it lead to a Great Depression in 10 years? Probably, because we can have a hell of a time in the meantime.
But yeah, let's roaring 20s part two.
Right. We'll just forget about what happened after the.
Yeah, I don't know. There's never been more things to watch, and I don't think been less interested. There's good shows out there. I just don't want to watch. I was starting to trend that way also about staying in more, and then this happened, and I'm just like, I just want to go to a bar.
Right.
I want to be there. I want to listen to a band and just have that be. It's like you don't know what you got till it's gone. Like that. That was the energy in those places is.
I was talking to one of my musician friends, and he was saying what he mostly misses about live music is, or one of the things he misses is those first few minutes right before you go on. When you've got this kind of nervous energy, like, okay, we're about to go on and people are there. And, when you're a band, you get together and you practice and you just sort of, you perform, you go over stuff and you can stop in the middle and start over. But, when you've got this, when you've got a show, it's like a rock rolling downhill. That's probably why they call it rock and roll. You just got this momentum that's going and, the people are there and, there's this, I knew someone who was a teacher who actually went to this conference once, a teaching conference, and these people had done this study and they actually found and they were doing it in the classroom, but I applied it to shows too, that there is definitely a measurable sort of electromagnetic communication that happens between a presenter and an audience.
Yeah.
And it is a feedback loop that can really, build on itself. And, musicians have known it for when it's there and for when it's not there. I mean, sometimes you just have a show where you're a little off and then that sets the audience off and then, it's bad. But other times where, you're hitting just right and the audience is like, yeah, and you can just, and you get this feedback loop and everyone is creating the moment. Sometimes I think of music as marking time. We're like marking time and space.
Yeah.
So that energy of, what is going to happen, and that's, the whole point about live music too, that is different from just listening to an album or watching a pre-recorded TV show. It's that instantaneousness. Which is like a little bit of danger too.
Yeah.
Cause you can mess up, you can play the wrong thing and wreck the vibe or something. But at the same time, that only adds to the vibe because, everyone goofs up a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's all about how you recover.
Sometimes those are the most memorable shows. I remember that show or the sound went out. When you recover from it, it's an even more applause.
You get to feel the love of the audience forgiving you.
I had one of the most epic moments of my life when the power went out one time out in Fieldbrook, and they had all sorts of propane tanks and sculptures that were shooting fire in the air. Mm-hmm. So the sound just goes out, all the electricity goes out. And we're just playing. So I'm like, drum solo. So I started, I'm the only acoustic instrument.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I started going off. And then in the distance, there's people with these crazy fire machines. And they had this little setup where you could hit a wire with a drumstick or something. And that would pull the opening of the gas nozzle and shoot up a little ball of gas and there's a little bit of fire there, so it just go, and so I'm like doing the drum solo and there's these huge balls of fire raging up in the sky around me and it's got this really great low frequency sound, and I probably wouldn't have heard that the same if the sound hadn't got out.
So at that point it would almost seem purposeful. I bet the everybody there was like, whoa, yeah, this power outage drum solo.
A high point.
when we do get back together, we need to bring back Flaming Tofu. This is he needs to have a resurgence.
Yeah, I know. This is relatively fireproof. I want to catch my hair on fire.
Well, speaking of epic shows, usually on New Year's Eve, Absinthe is playing somewhere. That's a Humboldt tradition. And that's coming up really soon here, New Year's Eve. So what are we supposed to do? Sir, what are you going to do? Can we just have a drum solo with some fireballs somewhere outside? Or are we allowed to do outside yet? Or no? I don't know.
Well, you know, it'll probably be raining. The last decade, Absinthe, we played 7, I think, New Year's Eve shows in a row. And we always would put in a little extra work to make an epic New Year's Eve set. You know, I remember like 2016 when it seems like every favorite artist died. You know, we put together a really special tribute set and brought a bunch of other musicians on to perform with us. And it was great. But, you know, the one thing I always remember about New Year's Eve, too, is we're obviously not the only party going on. And I just think about all my friends performing at the same time in different venues all over the county. And we were all sort of partying alone together. And I remember using that as a metaphor for this whole pandemic mess too. We're all alone together doing this.
There's a song about this.
I was going to say.
Oh, right. Yeah. Which is pretty great. Because it's, you know, it's a universal theme. And so, you know, New Year's Eve is crazy because it just like comes and it goes. I mean, every show is like that. You know, you practice 20 to 30 hours for something that lasts 2 hours. Yeah. You know, that's like the class, you know, and even on the day of, you know, when you're doing a show, depending on, you know, the quality and what's going on, you'll sometimes spend, you know, 3 hours doing setup and then 2 hours waiting for the show to start. And then the show is 2 or 3 hours and then it's another hour to break it down. So you can spend anywhere from 4 to 12 hours working on something that only lasts an hour and a half or 2 hours. Yeah. But when I think about New Year's Eve, I think about all the preparation that can go. And last year, Absinthe, we didn't do New Year's Eve, but I played with the Undercovers. We played at the Blue Lake Casino. We did that big Queen tribute. And that was super fun. I mean, that was another highlight of my performing career. I mean, the guys in Undercovers got to give all the credit to them because they're just, you know, incredible musicians. And
they make a big sound.
They make a big sound, and Matt, you know, stepping in and using his great voice to pull a Freddie was pretty awesome.
He hits the high notes.
Yeah. And then to be in that large a crowd where everybody knew all the words to all the songs and they're just riding the rail right up front and singing along with you.
It's church.
Yeah. But it was all, but I guess what I was really thinking of was all the preparation that we put into making that happen. We started practicing at the beginning of September to make that show as good as it was. And that's what all these New Year's Eve shows, you know, we've always like, everybody works a little extra hard to make it really memorable. And that's one thing for musicians in general. Like there's all this work that we put in to make these small moments of time really shine. Because, you know, the regular work that people do, like that's been one of my main worries with having people go back to work as much as they have been, but without the opportunities to really blow off steam in a safe way. And like you said, go to a bar and just find out what's going to happen, talk to a stranger, hang out with their friends, just find out, you know, what they're thinking, what happened this week. And you know, people need that.
Is there anything else that you would like to highlight or that you've been itching to say to Humboldt that you haven't been able to, because we're all apart?
Right. Well, I mean, I kind of want to go back to the idea of, you know, how it's going to work when we all get back to start to playing gigs. And it really comes down to the audience, you know, because, you know, when you think about how people have made it through this thing, it's by been turning to artists, you know, and while you're not watching TV shows, plenty of people are, you know, and they're filled with music and visuals and all sorts of stuff. And you know, the venue owners, they have a hard time, you know, finding the cash to pay musicians what we're worth. And so it's really going to come down to the audience. And, you know, I've done sound at a ton of shows where, you know, you're charging $5 at the door and people are like, oh, I'm just going to go to this other place and listen to, you know, a DJ for free or something like that. And people haven't been wanting to pony up even $5 or something. And like, no one wants to hear this, but I feel like we got to raise prices and people got to pay, you know, it's almost like back pay for the venues and for the bartenders and for the musicians and for the engineers and for the light designers and for the custodians, you know, and safety, security people. You know, like in, you know, we work, you know, I mean, it's a great job putting on events, but it's definitely work, you know, from all the perspectives, all those people I just named. So, you know, it costs money and it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know? And so we really, you know, for people to say they support musicians, it's just like any local business, you know, people are just going to have to like pay a little bit more, which is tough. You know, everybody's a little bit broke.
I think it comes down to, you know, just like what do we want? What do we want out of life? What do we want out of this place we live? What do we want out of our community? I think, you know, when we had Laurel on, I think we were comparing and contrasting just like, you know, how Humboldt is much smaller than, say, Shasta County, but we just have way more going on in terms of community and events, and it's part of, you know, what we pay for, I think, to live here. It's part of the promise of Humboldt that we've all come to expect. And again, when it is taken away, it really, it's a crisis, you know, it's a crisis of self. You're like, why, what is the point of any of this? It's not to sit in my house and watch Netflix. I should say, you know, I do watch Netflix and I sit there and I watch these shows and I'm just like, I want to be doing something else. Like while I'm watching this, I'm like, this is a great show. Show TV has never been better. And I want to be doing something else.
Exactly. Yeah.
And like I said before, I think that I see that as the silver lining. I think that people will want to support their local musicians and people who work in the music industry, because we've seen it with, I mean, I guess I don't really know, you know, what the numbers are or anything, but it seems like there's been a big push for people to, you know, shop locally. And I know that overall, like, that this has been a record year for purchases for, you know, right, for the holidays, even though people are broke, like they want to support the businesses that they care about, and they want to help spread some joy to people they care about by giving them gifts. And I think I see a lot of people, you know, really, and supporting.
Yeah, we got all these people out there. Just shop locally, choose Humboldt. Guys, listen locally. That's where we're exactly. Hashtag listen locally 2021.
Yeah.
I remember I was talking with a friend who lived in Nevada City, and she was saying how down there, like, she used to live up here and then moved down there, or, you know, somewhere around that area. And she was saying how when you're an hour or two from a city like Sacramento, or maybe, you know, 2 hours from SF, people felt like if they wanted to get a show, they would just go to a big city and go do that. But here, and obviously up here, people will drive 6 hours for a show in the city, no problem. But for the most part, you know, we're so remote. And that's one of the reasons I think our scene is so vibrant, because people, you know, there's not a lot of options out there.
We have to entertain each other.
Exactly. Like, people aren't going to Grants Pass for shows, you know.
Yeah, we don't live in anybody's cultural shadow.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. And then I remember Bird, our old mandolin player in Absinthe Quintet, he was saying how, like, our music, maybe in particular, has sort of, like, speciated up here. It's like, you know, because we're so remote, like, this music just goes and then doesn't interface with other music out there in the world, and we've created this own little weird thing up here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that works for Humboldt in general. We're definitely our own interesting little species of audience. Yeah, what's
weird?
what's the latest that's description of Absinthe? It seems like it's always different. Like, you are fire grass. What was the fire breathing grass, or what was it?
Well,
you
know, we don't have to go into all that. we've never like totally landed on, and we've had some embarrassing tries at it. Yeah. But this new album that we're doing right now is actually a concept album about an AI coming to life. Uh-oh. And it's way different. It's definitely outside the realm of what we've normally been doing, and yet it still has this kind of unique Absinthe tone to it.
Is this like a Mr. Roboto kind of thing, or
Robot Zero?
Okay, Robot Zero is the name of the Absinthe Quintet
Quartet
concept album. exactly. protagonist.
And it's definitely interesting because it's not just a collection of tunes like we've had in the past of like our, you know, zippy little jazz or weird little funk or whatever. It's definitely, it's this forward momentum and this whole thing just goes and tells all these interesting parts of this weird story about AI coming to life and taking over from what the humans have built. And,
wow.
And then, okay. So what's the stage show? Spoilers. What's the stage show going to be? I mean, like you're going to dress the part, obviously.
I know. Well, that's one thing I want to do. Like that in my mind, I see us having a show outside at Del Arte. And I want to like present it as like this hour long show complete with like puppets and a stage show. And you know,
it's got to be a whole multimedia experience.
Yeah, that's really what I want.
Then you shall have it.
And or make, you know, some sort of like, you know, 45 minute music video that would go with it.
Yeah. There's people with cameras. No, but we're bored. Everybody's bored. They will help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to keep us posted when you release the album. We'll be looking for this. Robot Zero was a right about that. Awesome. and thank you so much, Tofu Mike, for joining us today.
It was absolutely my pleasure. Everyone out there, we love you. We'll still play music probably no matter what. But it's all going to be different. You know, there's definitely pre-COVID, and then the music that comes in after COVID is, you know, it's got to be different. It's going to be
new energy.
No one knows what's going to happen. It's the new jazz age. Let's all make it awesome together.
All right.
Love it.
All right, Mike. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Thanks for the invitation.
All right, that's it. We want to thank Tofu for taking the time out of doing not much to Zoom with us. And let's all cross fingers or toes or whatever you do, pray to your deity of choice, that we can all get together and experience the energy and the community that live music provides in 2021, hopefully sooner than later when it's safe.
Yeah, and thanks for listening and sticking with us through this. Everybody have a happy and safe holiday season. Remember to mask up, and happy new year to everybody. 2020 is over.
Fuck this year.
Yeah.